Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
This morning, we're going to talk about Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center. Executive Director Elizabeth McNally is here this morning. Elizabeth, it is always good to see you. Good morning. Thanks for getting up and coming in.
Good morning. It's good to see you, too.
This is Safe Harbor. As we talk about it, and we'll get into all the particulars of what you do, I appreciate you coming in, just because sometimes these aren't easy conversations, and the type of work that you do isn't easy, but it's the type of work and how you do it is so it's such a benefit to this community. Talk about what Safe Harbor does, I guess, to start off this morning.
Sure, absolutely. Well, Safe Harbor, and again, thank you for inviting me. It's important to keep focused on this conversation and what's happening to kids in our community. Safe Harbor, for those who don't know, is a child advocacy center. And what that means, in short, is that we provide a place and a process for children who have made an allegation or an outcry of abuse. So we provide a place where kids can come and talk and feel safe. They can talk about what may have happened to them. That place is located in Fredericksburg. It is a several thousand now square foot facility that is all designed around children. We have a staff of six there who work with kids, and we bring them together along with the professionals who need to work with them to one place so that kids can get the treatment that they need and get on the path to healing. So that is the process. So the place is our physical space, yep. And the process is the services that we provide to them, both immediate in terms of forensic interviews and allowing kids to talk about what's happened, and then long-term case management and following their case through a potential prosecution, which is sometimes a multi-year commitment. So we work with a multidisciplinary team, and those are comprised of Department of Social Services investigators, law enforcement investigators, advocates, Commonwealth Attorney's Office, mental health providers, and forensic nurses. And then, of course, the CAC staff are part of the multidisciplinary team as well. So there is a multidisciplinary team for each of the six jurisdictions that we have formal partnerships with. So we are the only child advocacy center in the greater Fredericksburg area. And we serve the city of Fredericksburg and then the counties of Stafford, Spotsylvania, Caroline, King George, and we expanded into Orange County almost 2 years ago now. So children from all of those jurisdictions would be coming to Safe Harbor when they've made an outcry.
Now, we're lucky to have the facility, like the place in this area in what you do. And what you do is so complex. And I've always thought that you always talk about the place and the process. And that really is a great way to be able to describe what it is, because it is so complex of what you do. And so much of what you do, we don't ever see.
Right. We work directly with DSS and law enforcement. So when I say DSS, I mean social services, CPS. We work with CPS and law enforcement to take referrals for services. So our we don't necessarily market to the community, so we don't take referrals from parents directly.
Right.
If a parent ever calls with a concern, we will absolutely make sure that they get to the right place. And their child may end up coming to Safe Harbor. But it's a little bit challenging to promote what we do when our referrals pipeline is law enforcement,
right,
and DSS.
Yeah.
But you're right. We're there. We're kind of quiet. every day we have kids coming through the door. And over the course of the year, we see around 400 kids coming through the door. And these are kids that live in our community and need our help. So we're there. The process is complex, and what we aim to do is take that complexity on ourselves and not have the kids experience that complexity. So their cases are complex. Their trauma is complex. Our job is to like I said, bring those professionals together, everybody that needs to be involved, so that the child's really only interacting with one or two individuals. They're not interacting with 14 or 15 different people who are involved in their case. And that reduces potential trauma down the line to them as well. And it's more efficient for the whole system and the community to have one organization that's serving as the hub for investigations.
No, and a lot of times when we do find out about when there are charges brought or a trial, I often will look at those cases and think, Safe Harbor's has been, you've been really involved in these things. But again, we don't know that. But for the families and for the child,
right.
To have you is just terrific.
Right. Yeah. And so for confidentiality reasons, I mean, we're not out there saying, oh, yeah, we worked on that case.
Mm-hmm.
So that,
yeah.
We can't do that. We wouldn't do that. But our goal is that for any case that involves a child under 18 of sexual abuse, physical abuse, witness to violence, witness to abuse, that our investigative partners refer those cases to us at Safe Harbor. So ultimately, we want to see 100% of those children.
Yeah, yeah. Quick break. We're going to come back and talk about just the work, and we'll get into also how financially the community can get involved with Safe Harbor. SafeHarborVA.org, the website, SafeHarborVA.org. Elizabeth McNally here. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, our focus this morning. Elizabeth McNally, the executive director here this morning. SafeHarborVA.org, the website. You every year have a golf tournament, and there are ways that there are fundraising ways, or there are ways if someone wants to become financially involved mm-hmm. in what you do, Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's very easy to support our work. So we do have a couple of events per year, like you mentioned, the golf tournament, and then we also have a fall event called Save Jane, which is a community awareness event, and that event accepts sponsorships. We'll be sharing that information with the community soon about that fall event.
Okay.
However, we are happy to accept donations from generous folks at any time, and our website has a page. There's a donate button on every single page of our website. Where individuals can go on there and make a donation. They can restrict that donation to a specific use, or they can leave it unrestricted, which means that we can decide the best use of it. And we really do rely on community members to help support the work that we do. We do get grants. We get grants from the federal government and the Commonwealth of Virginia. But we do rely heavily on community support, and it's really important to get that. Some of our local grants have been reduced this year through no fault of Safe Harbor, just with kind of the way that the grant world is going right now.
Yep. Yeah.
And so it actually becomes more important to try to get funding from supportive people in the community. So easy to do that on our website. Look for the donate button.
SafeHarborVA.org, SafeHarborVA.org, and we'll talk about this again before we get out of here this morning. So much we hear, Elizabeth, so much about in society in all things, but with mental health and what's going on. And I would think that that's probably first and front and center with what you do and the agencies, the people that you're working with.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Mental health has always been front and center for Safe Harbor.
Yeah.
But as you know, as you just alluded to, there's a mental health crisis in Virginia. There's a mental health crisis in the United States. Safe to say there's a mental health crisis in the world. And so Governor Youngkin has put a mental health overhaul system in place, which is fantastic, to help offset what has been seen as a 20% increase in the number of people seeking services as compared to 10 years ago.
Wow, 20%. That's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. And I haven't read the study, but I would suspect that a large part of that 20% is concentrated post-pandemic or during pandemic as well. So the pandemic is layered on top of all that. So it's wonderful that there's support from the Commonwealth around overhauling the mental health system, or overhaul might not be the right word, supporting the mental health system to be able to serve more people. And mental health is a key component to what Safe Harbor does. So the kids that come to Safe Harbor, as we've talked about, they've made an allegation of abuse. They may have experienced chronic abuse. They need to be supported mm-hmm. with mental health. And we are fortunate enough to have a partnership with our local community services board, the Rappahannock Area Community Services Board. That partnership goes back almost to our opening in 2008. What they do is provide a full-time therapist to Safe Harbor. And the way that we partner is that we provide that individual space, including a dedicated therapy room, basically a therapy suite, a small clinic, to be able to provide therapy to kids. Another really important thing to mention about the therapy that we provide to kids is that it's entirely free. So we really don't want caregivers to have any barriers at all to having their kids access therapy. So it's important to us that there be absolutely no cost involved to them. There is a cost, but it's not to the caregiver. And so again, that partnership with RECSB, they have that same philosophical belief that, you know, kids should not have to be exposed to the barrier of having to pay for therapy to get that. So again, going back to raising money and having folks support the program is really important. So it is free. It is, the therapy is offered on site in our CAC. And one of the reasons that that's important is because when a child first comes to a CAC for what we call a forensic interview, they meet the team of people in who work in the CAC, and sometimes they meet the therapist as well in that first visit. And so we're building the foundation in that very first visit that they come to our facility for them to come back, potentially come back later. So they feel safe coming to a place where they've already met the people.
Yeah.
They're familiar with the surroundings. They've already met the people. And that's why we strive to maintain as many services as possible in our CAC, in our location. Not every CAC is able to do that. Not every CAC has their mental health services on site. Some kids go to another location for their mental health services, so that makes us unique.
That could be traumatic.
It could.
Just like you said.
Yeah.
If they've been coming and have done the interviews and mm-hmm. been there at Safe Harbor, and all of a sudden you're going to go across town, and it's a totally different setup.
Yep. And we're not even talking about the caregivers. I mean, the same is true for the caregivers.
Yeah.
They meet us. They start building a relationship with us. They go through the interview process. If their child is coming back for therapy, they also feel more comfortable. They already know where they're coming. They know the CAC. They know the people there. So it re-traumatizes. I'm sorry. It prevents traumatization of the caregiver as well. So keeping those services in one place is super important. So we're very lucky to have that.
And I would guess that probably in most cases they're going to need therapy. It just would. I know everything is different. Every situation is different. But,
Right. Boy,
this to not have therapy, even with therapy, I'm sure this can be a rough road.
Oh, it can be a very rough road, for sure. I mean, the kinds of things that kids can experience after being exposed to trauma, depression, substance abuse, suicidal ideation. They might even have like heightened cortisol levels in their body. Ultimately, they may become sadly involved with the criminal justice system themselves. These are all some of the outcomes of the trauma that they've experienced. And if we can intervene in that and teach them how to process and manage their trauma, then we may be able to avoid some of those negative outcomes. So it's very important. Not every child gets referred for therapy in our mm-hmm. CAC. We have individuals on our staff who assess kids after their forensic interview to kind of get a sense of what kinds of post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms they might be exhibiting right now. Not every child exhibits trauma right away. So another unique element of our program is that we leave the door open for therapy for kids until they're 18. And the reason for that is because some children, when they come to us for their forensic interview, they may have an interview, they may make a disclosure, There may be an investigation open. It may even be prosecuted. And that child may not be displaying symptoms of trauma right now. They may be referred for a different type of counseling if that's more appropriate for what they might be experiencing right now. But we know that the trauma associated with their abuse can come up at any time. So we want to leave the door open to them to come back. And we do have children who may have come for interviews when they were 5, 6 years old, aren't referred for therapy right away because they don't exhibit symptoms. Their caregivers know that they can call us back and we can connect them until they're 18. So I think that that is one of the most unique and trauma-informed elements of our program.
Yeah.
We keep the records for a really long time so that if they do call back, we know exactly who they are and can just step right back in and get them connected.
Yeah, because you never know. Like you said, everybody's different. Everybody's processing it differently.
Correct.
And to be, how sad would that be for a parent or even the child when they do start getting into the teenage years to all of a sudden need help and be told,
sorry,
you didn't need it back then and we can't help you.
Right. I mean, that's just not good enough. So that's not how we, we make sure that those kids have that availability. And we have to have a cutoff somewhere. So when they're adults, they're 18.
Right. Yeah.
We've had people over 18 call us and we still make sure that they get connected. But
you're right. You have to. But what's so interesting about this, Elizabeth, is because for years when we would talk Safe Harbor and do shows like this, or when I would tell people about what I knew about it, it always was just the interview set and how you're set up to where the child is comfortable and safe and it is able. There are so many more things than just that. And I guess this is as we talk about this morning, about just the mental health aspect, this is just an example of as you expand services and you learn things and you do things because – like I say, you know, in 2008 and afterwards, for years, it was just, isn't this wonderful?
Right.
They can sit in this room and it's not, you know, it's one person. Yeah, it's set up for them, but you've gone way beyond that.
Well, and that's, thank you. And that is how Safe Harbor started. And that is what I kind of call the gateway to our services is a forensic interview.
Yeah.
And so we did start with that. When we were first opened, we were a small staff of 2, and it was an executive director, I believe, and a forensic interviewer.
Yeah.
And then over time, we expanded to provide more services to kids to be more holistic. And so now we have advocates on staff, and I'll bring an advocate with me someday to talk about what they do. But in short, they work closely with the supportive caregiver to make sure that caregiver has what they need to support their child through the healing process. So that can be anything from emotional support to practical support. So if a caregiver doesn't have money to bring their child to therapy, we might be able to provide gas cards for them. Like we want to remove the barriers and make sure that caregiver can have their child fully participating in services. But you're right. We work on a multidisciplinary sort of platform, and advocacy is a big part of it. The mental health is a big part of it. We were actually founded, you probably know this, we were founded by forensic nurses. So our roots are in the medical.
I had forgotten that, yeah.
Yeah, in the medical kind of realm. And what the nurses do for our kids is so critical. That partnership with Mary Washington Healthcare. Again, we are a unique CAC in that we have a medical exam room on site. Not every CAC has access to that. Their kids and other CACs might need to go to the local hospital and see a forensic nurse at the local hospital. We can do it on site. So our forensic nurses come to our location and participate in services there and provide as many medical services as they can in our location. And it prevents the child from needing to make another stop at another place, maybe be re-traumatized just by the process, the systemic process of being in a hospital. So we bring as much as we can to the CAC.
Well, and this is why as we talk about this is why the Commonwealth's attorneys and the area police and the various the various agencies that are going to be involved in this case see the value of Safe Harbor, because ultimately it helps the child, the victims, and the families.
It's on one level, it's more efficient. It's more efficient for the community to have a program like this that helps children. But really, the underlying and the more important is that it's good for kids. Yeah.
Just because, like you say, to have to go to the hospital or an emergency,
room,
any of that, to be able to come to you sets everything in motion.
They already feel safe. They already, when a child feels safe, they're also more prone to actually talk about what happened to them. So
and be accurate.
I guess I can't overstate how important it is to have a CAC in the community.
Oh, no, you just talk here. I just think this is one of those things that we don't see.
You're right.
That you can't have so many agencies can tell stories.
Right.
And talk about the successes. And even you have to be, you have told stories before. Mm-hmm. But they're very generic, and we don't know where the people are, or you can't put a face to it.
Correct.
But
you make a really good point. Yes, it is kind of a challenge to be able to talk about our successes. I mean, we certainly talk about them internally, as a team and with our MDTs. But in order to protect that confidentiality of the people we serve, we can't do that in the community. So it is hard. Yes.
Well, that's why it is great that you come in here and talk about this, because it's great education, and just it gives us a little bit of a glimpse of things that are going on in an area that we just don't see often until it gets to a trial situation.
Right.
Or a sentencing. So thank you for what you do.
Oh, gosh. Thank you.
Much more to talk about here with Elizabeth McNally, the executive director with Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, safeharborva.org, if you want to find out much more about what they do at Safe Harbor. We'll continue to talk about mental health and some other stuff this morning with Elizabeth. We'll take a break and be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is 8:30.
From the Fredericksburg.today online news studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting station focused on Fredericksburg. This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Elizabeth McNally in this morning with the Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, safeharborva.org is the website. You mentioned, Elizabeth, about trauma-informed response, and I had not even dealt or even heard about that. And a couple of people with Spotsylvania Schools one time a few years ago came in and talked about it. Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a big... That's become there's training involved, and it really helps I guess investigators and people understand things a little bit better.
Yeah, it's sort of I kind of like to think of it in a nutshell as taking the time to understand what might have happened to a person that's impacting their behavior.
Yeah.
So when you think about kids in school who may be misbehaving, a trauma-informed environment would, rather than just moving right into a disciplinary action, stopping and understanding what might be happening in that child's life that's causing them to behave in that way. Mm-hmm. Because that behavior is maybe maladaptive, but it is their coping mechanism right now. And it may be in response to something traumatic that has happened in their life. So being trauma-informed for me, in a nutshell, means understanding what might be going on underneath, for the child or the adult that I'm working with or whomever. When you think about a child advocacy center, the entire center and the entire philosophy behind a center is trauma-informed. I mean, it is trauma-informed work in action.
Yeah, so every day.
Creating a place, creating a process that puts the child at the center and understands that what's happening with that child has trauma connections. Maybe stronger than connections, it actually has trauma roots. Everything we do is trauma-informed. And as I see more and more organizations and schools coming on to the trauma-informed movement, I think it's really important and great for all of our community because it impacts adults too. It's not just something that applies to children.
Yeah.
So kind of keeping on that theme, the specific treatment modality that we utilize with our therapy program is called trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. So I won't use that big long term anymore.
Boy, that is long. I don't think I could put it together even.
It's basically cognitive therapy that has a trauma layer. Yeah. So it's designed for kids and adults who've experienced or been exposed to trauma. So it's a specific type of treatment. And it is evidence-based. So that is what we use. That is what our therapist is trained in order to help kids move beyond and process their trauma. So we're very fortunate to be able to offer that modality. And I'll just tell you a little bit about it. It was designed to some of those symptoms that I mentioned earlier or outcomes of abuse that I mentioned earlier, like depression, suicidal ideation, PTSD symptoms. And PTSD symptoms can include things like intrusive thoughts, like unwanted memories coming into a child's mind and being able to process those. They may become avoidant. Children may become avoidant. They might have mood or anxiety disorders. And like I mentioned earlier, they might ultimately, sadly, get involved themselves with the criminal justice system. So we want to avoid all that. Trauma-focused therapy was designed to address all those types of, the aftermath of all those types of traumas and what kids can experience after they've been exposed to trauma. So trauma-focused therapy was designed to take place over anywhere from like 8 to 12 sessions, like 1 hour sessions. And one of the really, I think, unique elements of it is that it includes a caregiver component. So when a therapist is doing trauma-focused therapy in this protocol and meets with a client, she or he spends part of their time with the child and part of their time with the caregiver. So they're going through the certain process with the child, and then they're mirroring that process with the caregiver, and that is so that the caregiver, when they leave and go home, the caregiver can reinforce with the child what they've been learning in their own sessions. So it's important to have that, again, a caregiver who's involved in wanting their child to heal.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that you can't do TFCBT without a caregiver. That can be done, but it's enhanced when there's a supportive caregiver.
Boy, again, we talk about the layers
of
all of this. And really, I guess, when a child is identified as potentially being a victim, I mean, you're seeing people right from the start.
Yes.
And another benefit of Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center is because you're seeing them right away and you're able to make some determinations right away, mm-hmm. and you know what's going to be needed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, we see kids acutely. So kids who may have experienced their abuse within the past 24, 12 hours, very acutely. And then we may see kids who are making what's called a delayed disclosure. So they may make an outcry about something that happened years ago or months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, kids kind of fall into this range of when they're ready to talk about what happened to them. The acute cases goes back to why it's so important to have forensic nurses available, because there is actually a very specific time frame within which you can collect evidence of an assault.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, that's why it's so important to have those highly trained individuals available, so that if we are still within that window where evidence can be collected, that the right person is there to do it. And again, it's happening in the CAC. But yes, we're lucky enough to have advocates on staff who do a couple of different types of assessments to kind of get a referral ready for the mental health therapist. And then, of course, once a referral is made, the therapist does his or her own assessment of the child as well to see if they're a good candidate for TFCBT, if that's the type of therapy that will be best for them. And if they determine that it's not, then they'll make sure that child gets connected to a different type of therapy. But there are a few stages of assessment process to figure out what is it exactly that child needs, and will our therapy treatment program fit them?
One of the things that occurs to me as we talk about all this, Elizabeth McNally here from Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, is when we hear about, it's hard to hire people and vacancies in a lot of things. It's difficult, I would think, if you do run into situations where you do have vacancies, because some of this can't wait.
Yes. You're right. And we're actually facing that situation right now. So unfortunately, the individual who was providing therapy to us, for us, she was with us for about 3 years, and she was an employee of our partner, the CSB.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did fantastic work. Kids and caregivers really responded to her, and kids made some great strides with her. So we hated to see her go. She wanted to expand her horizons, and
sure, you know, it happens.
It happens. So we're actually facing that situation right now, Ted. So we do have a vacancy. I'm sorry, the CSB has a vacancy in their position. So it's being advertised on their website. So I believe their website, I will look it up during one of the breaks. But if you Google Rappahannock Area Community Services Board, they have a long name too.
It is, yes.
So you can easily find their website. The job is posted there. It's posted in multiple places. RACSB is a fantastic employer. And they have themselves experienced vacancies in other positions that they have. So that was another component of the governor's study and the governor's work around making the mental health system stronger, was addressing the vacancies that people were experiencing in their organizations. And then, so the people aren't available to provide the services to the people who need them. So I know that was something that they were experiencing, and the local CSB has done a lot of work around, building their systems and programs so that they can attract more people to work there and serve more people in the community. So yeah, they're working hard on that. But for right now, we're in a space where we're working with the Community Services Board to get services in place for kids who are really acutely in need. And then we ensure that other kids who are not quite as acutely in need for therapy get connected externally to services. So we still make sure that they get connected.
But when you talk about a job or jobs where you never know each day what's going on, you just never know who's going to come in and what situation they're going to be in.
You never know what's going to come in. And the other thing is, when you're specializing in serving kids who've experienced this type of abuse and this type of trauma, I mean, that is the person's whole caseload. So it's just the subject matter alone. It's the not knowing what's coming in, but it's also that every case that they get referred is going to be about physical abuse or sexual abuse. And that, I mean, again, we try to be trauma informed for our employees and then the folks who are working for us, and understand that the vicarious trauma of that can add up over time. And CSB is great about working with their staff on that as well.
That's another area that you can't just assume that you can't just leave it at the office kind
right.
of thing.
Right. And part of the reason we partner with the CSB is that they have clinicians on staff who provide supervision to the person who's providing mental health services for our kids. So they get that professional supervision. They get that professional support from people who do similar work. So I myself am not a clinician, so it wouldn't be possible for me to really provide that. And so it's another element of the partnership that's really important, that the people doing the work get that support from folks who also do that type of work and understand what it's like to do that type of work every day.
Yeah.
So that support is very important. And CSB provides that.
And the facility you're at, you've got to have, because you talked about that you have made some changes with your facility or added on to some things. And you can see that you have to when we talk about, you have a room for this or a room for that. Those are rooms you have to have.
You do. I mean, back when we were smaller, our mental health clinician bless her, she used to provide all of her services in her office. But when you work with children who are doing this type of therapy, you need things like, you need a dollhouse, and dollhouses can be big,
mm-hmm.
Because the kids actually use the dollhouse to kind of not reenact, but to process the trauma.
Sure.
That they've experienced. They also use things like a sand table. I don't know if you've ever seen a sand table, but it's probably about 3 feet long.
Yeah.
And it has a bin, and the bin is filled with sand, and kids can use manipulatives in the sand table. So this person had all this in her office.
Wow. I never thought of that, but those are tools that you can get to get kids to communicate.
Yes. And kids like to move around. They like to be using their hands to do things. They like, they're busy. And they need to be.
Yeah.
And so when we had an opportunity to expand and make the space bigger, we did that. And we essentially put into place a mini, what I would call, clinic. So it's an entire suite that's dedicated to mental health services. So there's a dedicated therapy room. There's two offices, actually, for therapists. There's a waiting room. It's an entire suite. And we just felt like it was important to bring that to kids in the community so that we could really give them the space and the all the equipment and tools that are needed to process their trauma and heal. And then we recently expanded one more time into another about 1,200 square foot area of our building and are putting the final touches on a second forensic interview room and all of the kind of pieces that go along with that so that we can serve more kids.
We're going to take a break and come back, and that's a great segue to again talk about, we talked earlier about just providing funding for Safe Harbor, and these as the area grows and more gets known about this and more rooms are needed, that's where some of this funding goes, and we'll talk about that when we wrap it up with Elizabeth McNally, the Executive Director of Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, safeharborva.org. We'll conclude when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Download the all-new News Talk 1230 WFVA app for Apple and Android. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. And now, here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center, our focus with Elizabeth McNally this morning. Always good stuff, safeharborva.org. And that really gives you a lot of information, Elizabeth, on what we have talked about. One of the things that struck me is when I went to the website the other day and just to see what was going on, and I saw, and I forget, it was under a category, and it just said, child victims of abuse need safe harbor to expand their services. And that just hit me of where that shows, and we have talked about it, and that's kind of been one of the themes this morning, that you are expanding, and you're expanding because of the needs, and those children need what you're providing.
Right. The numbers of children being abused and the reports that are coming in, they're not going down. So there are kids in the community who need additional kids in the community who need our services.
And as you learn about mental health and things that are needed, we know more than just even a few years ago.
Yes. Yes. So I don't think that expansion is going to stop for us. As I mentioned before the break, we just expanded into a third space to bring a second interview room. We will probably stop and take a little breath for a few months now to get ourselves settled into that. But I think there's going to be more expansion. I think the next expansion for us is probably going to be into different additional geographic jurisdictions. So one of the things I haven't really talked a lot about is that we do provide some services to kids who live outside of our local area. And a couple of those jurisdictions have begun to rely on us more for providing services. So we have about three outlying jurisdictions that we're kind of looking at on our long-term plans to potentially expand into. Not with physical space necessarily, but having kids come to us because there isn't a CAC where they are.
Again, that's what we're just so – we say it all the time when you're here, but we're really fortunate, as you have described these services, have that.
Investigators will come from – hour and a half away, and we don't want kids to have to travel that far, but if they don't have a CAC in their area, you know, we want to make sure that we help them. So that's the kind of the next expansion on the horizon for us is likely into different geographic areas.
So if you're looking for a group to donate your money to,
please pick us.
Yes, because as we have talked about it this morning, there's really no areas of what you're doing. Once someone contacts authorities and the ball gets rolling on this, their kids are coming right away to you.
Yes,
and you're providing from the very start all kinds of services.
Yes, and just because the community doesn't hear, I mean, we're here. You're gracious enough to have us on your program. It's hard to talk about what we do because of confidentiality.
Yeah.
And that is our number one priority, is to maintain confidentiality of kids. And so we can't be in the community talking about all the things that we do in that way. But we're here. So our voice might be small, but our impact is huge.
Oh, it is.
Soon we will be launching a new website. So you talked about our website a little bit. We've been fortunate enough to get a grant to be able to overhaul our own website. And so we're going to be relying a lot more on the website to attract, to educate the community, but also attract folks in to support Safe Harbor. So we'll soon be launching that, I would imagine, in the next 30 days or so. There'll be a lot more information about what we do on that website than is on our current website. And it'll be more engaging for folks. And it will be, again, very easy to donate. And we do need the support of the community.
Place in a process is what we started with, and that really is such a great term to describe what you do, especially because you, like you said, you can't, you're not on bumper stickers, or you don't have billboards or flyers showing what you do, but to know that there is a place and there is a process, and the outcomes are what you see and know about. And as you've described it, again, we're really lucky to have you.
Yes. And we're lucky that we're in a community that is supportive.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. SafeHarborVA.org. SafeHarborVA.org. Check it out. If you're looking and wanting to make your money and put it in an effective organization, Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center is for you. SafeHarborVA.org. We'll talk about Save Jane next time you come in.
Yes.
That'll come up sometime in the fall, and we'll talk about that. Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Ted.
Always good to see you.
You too.
Elizabeth McNally, the Executive Director, Safe Harbor Child Advocacy Center. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA, focused on Fredericksburg.